So since we have one quick item before we start with 7373, let's just go ahead and sit down.
Okay, I'm ready.
Morning, Carl.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice brisk this morning, huh?
Well, welcome everyone. Again, just a reminder that the meeting is being recorded. Unfortunately, last time though, our technology failed us. So we, so the plug got kicked. So we don't have the recording. So we are going to have to vote on the notes as meeting minutes rather than having the recording as meeting minutes. So if you all had a chance to look at that, I'd like to have a motion from someone for approval of the November 29th meeting minutes.
So moved.
Okay. And a second? Great. And vote, please. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. So,
So what I
noted is that our landscape architect really wants to hear the presentation on the plaza portion. So what we're probably going to do is do a first portion of the presentation and then start with comments and questions. And then once Chow Joy comes, we'll do the second part, honing in on the plaza and the landscape design. And so that's how we're going to try to organize today.
There's an alley here.
Generally, right. We'll probably try to do about a 10 to 15-minute presentation, and then we'll have question and answer. Towards the end, we'll talk a little bit about the public benefit points requested and get the panel's input on whether or not that's appropriate number. And then I'll do a summary at the very end just to make sure we're all on the same page and what recommendations should go into the staff report. We could do quick introductions around if everyone, or did you not want to do that? You wanted jump right in. You gave everyone a
ironically,
sheet.
Ironically, Doug Furstenberg's not on this list, so he has to sign in. So I never know his. Apparently, I never know his schedule. total embarrassment there, but that's okay.
Oh, one more thing before you start, just so the panel understands. This is similar to Marriott in that it came in with concept plan early, and then now they're at sketch and site combined. So that's where they are in the process, and so we're approving both of those stages.
Great. Good morning. My name is Jay Mahaffey. I'm with Stonebridge Caris and with Bavermo Investments. Stonebridge Caris is a developer of 7373, what we have now named the project Avocet Tower. We're very excited to be with you today. We did include at each of your places, mostly everyone is here today, but I just want to just run through our partners on the project. So we have Picard Chilton is our design architect. They are joining forces with Cooper Carey, who is our local architect of record. Parker Rodriguez is our landscape architect. Vika, our civil engineer. And Bob Donfield isn't here yet, but I was going to say the esteemed firm of Linnows and Blocker as our zoning attorney. Matt's going to have to take that back to him there. So we're really excited to present this project to you today. This project started actually in 2013. It is classified as a strategic economic development project in Montgomery County. And it is that way because it is actually part of a public-private partnership with Montgomery County. In 2013, Stonebridge Caris and Bavermo were selected to take a portion of this site that you see here, 7359 Wisconsin, and to find a new home for the 2nd District Police Station in Bethesda CBD. That project is a turnkey development, so Stonebridge has secured the land. We're building the project, designed and built the project with Montgomery County, and Montgomery County Police will have a new home in January of 2018. At that time, we actually will secure the land on that. When we started looking and visioning this project, one of the things we looked at was the impactfulness of this intersection in this location in Bethesda. You have Wisconsin Avenue here. Oh, God, here we go. I'm terrible at this. You have Wisconsin Avenue here, Montgomery Avenue, crisscrossing here, Waverly Street, sort of circumventing the site. This is a really impactful site in Bethesda. You're right in the central CBD. You are surrounded on with three current entrances to Metro, and the fourth coming through with the south entrance and the Purple Line station in Bethesda. The intersection here, one of the interesting things, and John will talk a little bit about it in terms of the orientation of the building and some of the important features, is it's really visible from a number of locations, both far and close to the site. In terms of the orientation of Wisconsin Avenue, the grade changes as you're coming up Montgomery Avenue. It's really an impressive, and we'll show it in the model, way to actually sort of arrive upon the site. One of the things we thought, which was very important, was to really make that impactful at the corner. And thus, we actually, 7359 is this piece right here, we actually secured 7351 and 4630 Montgomery Avenue. And to do that, it actually gave us a site that was a bit more developable than the police station, but it also allowed us to really have much more of an impact on the intersection and the corner. This even became more important as the master plan came out, and the interest to develop Pearl District really became a gateway into that Pearl District also. It also allows us to really focus on keeping these as major intersections and putting a lot of the loading and entrance on Montgomery Avenue. On Waverly Street, anyway. So I'm going to turn it over to John, who's going to talk about the architecture and what we have developed out of this project. As he gets up, just quickly, it's mixed use. It's 513,000 square feet. We have an office and hotel. And I will be your driver.
You get to drive.
I'm your driver.
Okay, so I'm not going to comment, Jane. So good morning. We really appreciate the opportunity to work on a great project like this in a community that's really seen dramatic transformations. I will tell you, as we think about a project like this, the design excellence guidelines provide a really thoughtful roadmap. It's important, as many of you know, we practice nationally, and I think it's critically important for Bethesda that the project find in its spirit something that is specific and appropriate to the context of Bethesda. And Bethesda is transforming, and as we go through today, we'll talk about how we've approached that. We're focusing clearly on creating a sense of place, embracing the public realm, creating a building that uses some of the strategies that you see in Bethesda, but we'd like to think takes it, transforms it, brings it to another level. And then ultimately, how do we create an environment where people live and work together? If we were doing a project like this even 10 years ago, it would be a something, an office building or a multifamily. And what you're going to see today is it's really one integrated project where people live, work together in one place. And finally, how do we do it with a low impact development? I'm talking down here because I want to make a couple comments. Let's go to the next. So it occupies a critically important position in Bethesda. And I'm using this model a little bit to talk about how we thought about it. And the model is actually a little out of date. I can highlight a few changes. But we felt that the density of the site is most prominent here at the intersection of Wisconsin and Montgomery. As you come out of the metro, it acts like a beacon, a lighthouse on the corner. One thing we wanted to do, though, was we felt that although the master plan allows for that density, we wanted to transition. And so what you're seeing in the model there is how the masses step down to the Pearl District, step down to the residential district there. And we feel that's important. The other thing we want to do is really make sense of it's by any standards, a large building at, over 500,000 square feet, but we didn't want it to feel like a large building. Now let's go through the details. And I may just come over here a little bit and talk about that. We can refer back to the model. So a couple things that are important to us. How do you create a landmark, but how do you embrace the public realm? and what you're seeing, and how do you lock it into the composition? So there are a lot of ideas that this image begins to address. We have lifted the building to create a what we think is a really exciting public space here below the tower, respecting the mustard seed here. So the composition literally steps up to kind of embrace the mustard seed, so it's seen from lots of dimensions. And although the mustard seed may not be seen as a brilliant piece of architecture, I think it plays an important historic role in the community. It was one of the very first office buildings in Bethesda. The other thing that we're excited about is not just having a public space at the base, but frankly, a public gathering space, public meaning accessible by tenants, at the top of the tower. So there's a kind of what we call a sky guard, sky terrace, which acts as a beacon. And you begin to see how this building together forms a kind of a monumental gateway, which then leads people into the Pearl District.
Okay. All right, what do I get to get it back out? You touched it too close.
Oh, did I touch it?
Yeah, that's okay.
Oh, sorry.
There's some.
So stay 3 inches away.
There's some magical thing that I'm not aware of.
Well, you know, technology
okay,
is
now
never.
I do.
Okay, good.
Yale fails us in technology. It has other benefits. Okay, so let's just go through the meat and potatoes. It's really one integrated development, and that section begins to show it. What you're seeing is, although the color's a little bit soft, there is nominally a 400,000 square foot office building above a 500 car parking garage. The first thing I'll say is you will never know there's a parking garage. It will be completely masked behind the enclosure, two floors below grade, the balance above. There's a hotel at the Waverly end of the composition. The blue is serving the office, parking shuttle, and hotel. So it's really one structure, 225 keys there. Okay? So those are the components. Now, how do you bring those together? Let's go into the... So I'll touch on this. It's a very interesting little jigsaw puzzle of uses that interlock and complement. I'm going to the next floor because I want to talk about this. One of the things that's, as you know, I spend my life creating office buildings, and there's a revolution going on right now, and Stonebridge, I think, is leading the way, where we're trying to come up with a better office building. And what this shows is we're taking the core, we're sliding it to one side. The problems that we're dealing with is we've got property lines here, so we've set the enclosure off the property line to get a maximum visibility. And in essence, what we're doing is we're creating an open loft. This is really leveraging the kinds of planning we're doing for some of our major corporate building suits. And so that literally, as we plan that, it's completely open and totally flexible. And we're being able to bring natural light deep into the space from all sides. Other things that may not be profound in a drawing like that is we want to create a unique experience when you come off the elevator. There's a view back to the south, to the National Cathedral. We have daylight into the washrooms. And so this is not your everyday commercial office building. We think it's something that, frankly, doesn't exist in Bethesda. It probably doesn't exist throughout much of the United States because these kinds of trends are new, and it's what we literally just built for the global campus at ExxonMobil. So that's a part of what you're seeing here. The other thing that I think is important is we've got these larger floor plates up high versus down on the bottom, which we think is a great experience for the tenants and creates great value for Stonebridge. So it's important. We are required to provide generous gardens on the roof of the building. We've done that in spades. So literally well over 35% of the roof is an intensive garden. But more importantly, that we have tenants will be able to come up here and actually use that. So the space that you see as an identifier for the building is a space that will be used. It's a garden. And I think what we're hoping is that the symbol of the building will also become a symbol of Bethesda, which is really this garden in the sky. And here you begin to see it. And this is literally the strategy. And the reason it's important to look at that image versus that model is we met with some of the planning staff here a while back, and there was a very good criticism of couldn't we increase the hierarchy of the dominant mass and maintain that sort of cascade. And we've taken that to heart, and I think that image reflects the reality where that model has not been revised. So
But that's the idea. The other thing that's important is, this is one building, but you can see how we're operating on the facade to break the scale down. We would never do a building like this in another city. We've just completed new towers, Chicago, Houston, and Denver. And they've been acclaimed, at least on social media, as the best buildings in the city. They look nothing like this. This building is specific to Bethesda. We would not make those operations in downtown Chicago or Houston. Okay? So we've looked at the planning guidelines very carefully. There's a clear base, a middle, and a top. In fact, there are multiple tops. So each one of these compositions, we want to crown with an appropriate top. Now here you see the building, and this is where you come off the metro. You see the space. We would like to think it's going to be engaging. You'll be attracted into that. It invites people into the activity. And you can see how these forms, it really looks like three buildings. In fact, it's one building. So it's one, two, three as you go down Montgomery. Okay. And then here you are at the top. I'm going to talk a little bit about enclosure. One of the things that the guidelines suggest and we're committed to is taking strategies that may be used in Bethesda, but either doing something new or doing it better. And to be frank, Bethesda is characterized by a lot of precast concrete and a lot of, how should we say, inexpensive glass curtain walls. What we're doing is we've built a reputation for doing exquisitely detailed enclosures. And so there is a very beautiful enclosure, which is designed to be highly sustainable. So the goal is a low-impact development. We want to have, the goal is LEED gold, or if we can go higher, we will. So on the south facade, there are a series of horizontal sunshades that provide protection for the glass. Very carefully curtain wall, completely unlike what's here in Bethesda. And to be honest, not inexpensive. The intention is, our goal is this will be the finest building in Bethesda. That's the mission. You also see bits of, and I'm going to touch on this, there's a lot of precast in Bethesda, not particularly well detailed. And what we're proposing here to enclose things like the service core is that would be very carefully articulated precast concrete, but done well. And so all the elements that are there, but they've been transformed. And then finally, there's a kind of solar scrim that comes up the side of the tower and it comes over. It provides sun protection for the sky terrace and really helps them establish a statement, which also will come down and serves as a soffit over the civic space. Okay, and then here's the same system that comes down. So you can see the beginning, the articulation of the wall and the transformation of the wall as you move down Montgomery. And then here the scrim comes down, turns under, and then very carefully clad columns. And then the space that we'll get into here in a moment. And what's not shown in this, which we have at the very end of the presentation, is a vision for public art, and it's quite spectacular. Okay? So, let me just talk you through some things that are really important to understand. Jane and Doug felt from day one, they didn't want a conventional office lobby sucking up the vitality of the site. They wanted a vital integrated complex. So the hotel here, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that. Those are all active uses. That's not laundry, that's not maids, that's all active public uses with access here, to the hotel, access into the office. So the office is there, it will be a beautiful lobby, but it's very, very discreet. The activity is here, and we'll have image to show you. This is not your everyday hotel. This is a whole new called AC, and it's going to be quite fabulous. And that will infuse the power of that whole garden. And we'll go into that here in a bit. Let's go to the next. Yep. So here you have an image of that space. You can see again how the composition steps up. We're looking at a series of wood-clad soffits, and then the public art will cascade through there. Go into the next one. So, and I won't explain this as gracefully as Trini would, but basically, Trini's vision is that there are a series of living rooms and that there's a zone here which the guests at the hotel will flow out. There's going to be dining, presumably beverages. There's another living room here. This is more of a transitional space as you go into the office. But I think what makes it magical is the combination of lush landscaping, which you see everywhere, and then these magnificent water pools and stones where the water cascades down. So there's a vertical water feature there that cascades down under the Ipe decks here and here. Really quite special. Okay? And then here, so here's the water feature. And you know what that does, it's not only is it visually compelling, but there's the sound of water, which I think transforms the sense of what this space will be. I mean, I really believe this will become the center of Bethesda. I mean, that's the vision. Okay, another image. And then here you can see it more from, so we're still developing the seating, but the intention is there's plenty of generous seating here, benches. This will be the cafe tables, undoubtedly with umbrellas and so forth, just to create more scale. But this whole ensemble is, you know, very carefully thought through with rooms that flow back and forth among one another, okay? Now, I referred to that sort of orange swath. This is not specifics for your project, but that's the kind of living space that AC is envisioning. And that's what flows right out on the terrace. So it's not your, you know, it's not a conventional Sheraton or something. It's something quite special. And so the whole Mason Tower is totally transparent. So the activity plays back and forth between Montgomery and ultimately between Wisconsin. Let's talk a little bit about the art. It's going to be presented, I think, next week.
Yes.
So it's fast off the press. There is this vision of this element that literally is floating through space. And the designers is Itschlossberg's firm, ESI. And they're just amazingly creative. You may know from the local installation, Terrell Place, that's what's the recent project that they've done. But this construction kind of floats through the space. It will be illuminated with LED. And then what's important is there'll be activation sensors. So this is during the day. The next image is at night. And the idea is it can transform in color. So today, or during the day, it may be colors. At night, it may be white. All of that is yet to be determined. One of the things we're trying to figure out, though, is how this element literally comes and embraces the architecture. So we're envisioning that these wrap around columns, and then in the next image you can see there are touch pads where you can literally, as you're walking by, you can interact. And we're hoping there might even be motion sensors, so if somebody walks by a certain spot, it clues it in. And it's the kind of thing, it sounds a little silly, but people will love it. And so we're trying to connect human activity with a sculpture. So we really believe that the architecture we've talked about responds to context, creates a sense of place, embraces the public realm, uses materials in a special way, will create a vital environment. People are there 24/7, unlike a conventional office building, and we're going to have a very low impact development, both low impact in terms of sustainability, low impact in terms of how we've taken what is in essence a large building and integrated its massing into the context. And with that, I'm delighted to answer any questions that you would have.
Great presentation. I'm actually really happy you brought the model.
Yeah.
Because it relieves some concerns I had in getting some of the advanced materials, like maybe there's too many elements on the design, and particularly if you look in the materials that we got when you're looking west on Montgomery Avenue back to the building, it seems like there's too much going on. I am familiar with your firm's work, and I did look on it more on the webpage, and it's quite refined, and it's not necessarily, this has a lot more going on it,
it
than
does.
All of your other projects, not most of you, all of your other projects. So I'm glad to hear the explanations. I'm curious about a question, and I'm just curious, your typical floor plate, how you market it. It's not a multi-tenant floor plate, is it?
Well, you'll not be surprised. We've tested it both ways. It actually works out quite well for a multi-tenant. We went through a center core, that's a dream, but where it shines is a full floor user. What the vision is, it's likely to be full floor users on the top, and it works out very well for a multi-tenant on the low zone.
Yeah, so the top floor is about 28,000 square feet. Yeah. Lower floor is just about 20,000 square feet.
Right.
So that we actually did, because Side Core is new for us also in our development firm, we actually did a lot of testing of the Side Core with 1, 2, 3, and even 4 tenants on the floor.
I'm sure you did.
Jane is disciplined.
And it was interesting, and we actually, we've been obviously out there in the market with the project, and we did some test fits for a full floor tenant. Extremely efficient on the top floors, more efficient on the top floor than lower floor, actually. So we've done a lot of testing of that. We're actually very excited because it does really allow a lot of window space and really big flow-through space. If you notice, it's a fairly narrow and longer site. It's not a deep office site. So putting a center core in that site would really have made very narrow bands on the saw. And if you look at the way people work with open plan and trying to get light in and doing more offices in the center, it really lends itself to that kind of plan.
One question I'd like to ask, the ownership of the adjacent property, the Marriott. Mm-hmm. One of the things the design guidelines calls for is basically a setback between adjacent properties. Mm-hmm. And what would happen if the Marriott, that property gets redeveloped? What impact do you really have on them?
Well, we don't really have impact on individual, outside. But what we've pulled back, and one of the things we tried to do relative to sort of the setbacks that we have, and they're not, in terms of the guidelines, they have, we've done a lot with sort of setting our sort of core areas, and we've set back where we've had the glass areas on it. The Marriott also has an interesting play in that the site is actually sort of off angle to us, and as we looked at the Marriott and sort of their rooms, they're really off angle to us and move out. So we didn't really feel there would be that much impact. Obviously, if they go 250 feet up, we have, you have what your separations are. But as we hit the glass areas, we pulled it back. And we intentionally put some of these core areas here. It worked well with the side core to have that, where it's basically more of our bulk and not window line.
Right, sure.
And John did a lot of studies, and Justin did a lot of studies when we looked at that in terms of how much window you could have. So we have those little touches where people can see light through, but they're not main areas of the office or the hotel.
Your other things, you made a comment, which I appreciated, about how many moves we have. And one of the things that's happened since that model was built is the distillation. So some of the complexities have been kind of calmed down. This is a naive show of windows there, which is unnecessary. That's really going to be a nice surface, but it's right literally on the property line, so that will be virtually opaque, but it will detail it carefully.
It would typically be the demising wall of the hotel room, right?
Exactly.
It's hard to put a window in that
wall.
You are
correct.
Right.
I know that from experience.
Can you talk a little bit about the base to your building? In this model, it's very abstract.
Yeah,
I'm trying
to think of the best image to go to.
Particularly on
you
Waverly.
Have his extra, Justin.
Watch it.
Going forward is extra. He's got to go back.
Go back. Okay.
Well, Justin, why don't you take us back to any? I'm just trying to show if we can show Montgomery. There's that one shot. That'd be good. So the strategy is, it's not really. The columns are articulated in the 30-foot bay, and there'll be floor to ceiling transparent glass. We haven't done the precise detailing, but the idea is maximum transparency, and which really works because of what's happening in that space. That's their living room, there are people in there, and so what we're trying to do is literally all of that's transparent. Obviously there's an entrance here, which was in this rendering was shown down here, it's shifting over to right there. But that will be transparent. It's relatively high, that's about 22 feet from there. Also, didn't get into this business. These spaces are quite generous. I mean, that space is, we went through the arithmetic again last night. That space is literally from that surface to there, about 50 feet. From that surface to there, about 60 feet. So we've also done the sunlight studies filled with light.
One thing, we have one more person to enter the room, so if you could introduce yourself, please.
Oh, I'm Bethany Rogers, I'm with Bethesda Magazine.
So on the model, you have a surface on the three volumes. Here you have the garage is articulated and the hotel is articulated, and then where this volume comes down, it passes the parking garage.
Yeah.
And then, but in this model, it's not
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And then what's back so, under the hotel?
Yeah, so what we're doing, just so the diagram is from that line across is the parking garage. And part of what we've learned is it's not, a lot of architects would say honesty in expression. We've learned if you have the parking garage, then suddenly the life of the building is removed from the street. What we're in essence doing is we're masking it. And I could give you examples of projects we've done this very successfully where you don't know what's going on. And so we purposefully have a more complex base where that line begins to align with that line. This drops down. And that is, we actually had an earlier scheme where it was, and it felt too much like a project. We felt more dynamic if you have this, this, and this. And that's part of what's being proposed. And this was an earlier study.
So what happens with that curtain wall at night?
At night. Yeah.
Over the garage.
What we've done is there is a translucency in the glass, and you actually get, we can get the lights for the parking garage very softly done. So in our early generations of strategies, we did solid spandrel glass. And at night, what happens is it goes black from here to there.
Mm-hmm.
In the latest generation, we have done this translucent glass. During the day, you don't see anything because it blends with the glass above.
Right, right.
But at night, you actually get a sense, and you're not quite sure what you're looking at, that there's activity back there. But you don't get into the details of the specific lights. You don't see the cars. We may even have photographs we can pull out, because literally we just finished up a building in Texas, in Houston, 609, and we have a 12-story parking podium. And one of my concerns was exactly that, is that does it feel like you've taken the life of the building and lifted it up in the sky? And it doesn't. It flows down. So,
do you have any images of Waverly Place?
No.
This elevation here?
We do not. But I go to the plan, and let's talk about Waverly. Yeah. Because Waverly is, it'd be, yeah, perfect. You can appreciate, when we started the project, how do you service a building like this? It's not Wisconsin. We looked at Montgomery. It really doesn't want to be Montgomery. I mean, that disrupts the bike trail. That disrupts the traffic. So in essence, everything is focused on Waverly. With great, we've got three portals into the parking, an in, two out, and three portals into the loading. And then there are pedestrian safe zones, here, oops, I keep doing it, here and here, as you make that way down Waverly. And then one of the things I learned, frankly, working with my partner Steve Smith in Arlington, is the loading doors need to be fabulous. And so we will detail those, not like the loading doors that you typically would see. So it's something that's very, very carefully done. It's as important to us as it is to Bethesda to get this building right.
So while you have that drawing up, what is that lane on Montgomery Avenue,
yeah.
single lane?
So in the master plan and the new site plan, it is the a future bike lane.
Oh, cool.
And we're working, this is sort of what's been worked with MNC PPC and DOT, who both are looking at what the future bike lanes are. So this, because it's a one-way street, the concept is to take one of the lanes from there's three lanes going forward now, turn that into a bike lane. As it's a one-way street, it's a dual track, so it's a little bit wider than you'd normally see. So it's an east and west bike lane, and with a separation in from the cars.
That's confusing, I think. It's not your fault. But having a two-lane, bike in both directions on a one-way street, mm-hmm. I think gives a really bad indication of, the movement system, because bikes are cars in a sense.
Oh, I was confused, frankly, when I was reviewing this the other day. Apparently, I'm told that the paving of that has to match the paving of that, which I found really confusing. You'd expect it to be green or something that would clue bike riders and cars to not drive on that and to be safe, but that's above my pay grade.
I think a lot of it's understudy, and I think this is a unique situation because it's a one-lane, it's a one-way directional road, so if they come the other, what we've been told, coming the other way,
there's the traffic issues.
Yeah, you have intersection
issues.
You
come to an intersection that has a traffic light.
We're gonna leave that one to the experts. What we've agreed to is to put in front of our project what gets decided in the end by DOT and park and planning. So,
I did mention the master plan does call for Montgomery eventually to be two-way.
Wow.
There is a study that there is that too. Yes. So
interesting. Removing the one-way couplings.
But I'm concerned about this elevation here, and that's the only one I've seen of Waverly. I've got this plinth of gray stuff, and then I've got highly articulated hotel rooms, and it just doesn't seem to come together in an overlap.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I want to see some of this come down and engage the base, mm-hmm. as opposed to just being part of a, mm-hmm. The development above this plinth.
Yeah.
Really like the site plan rendering, and also I think the space is grand, but also breaks into rooms. That works really well. Love the wall feature, because when I think about it, is this going to be granite? What is it? The stone?
The answer is it's concrete, but
the stone on the
like veneer cladding.
It is stone. Yeah.
Okay.
The plants are stone.
I think it will look nice in wintertime when the water is
right.
Off,
that's
which
exactly
is great.
And that was one of our intentions. We Stonebridge Cares really likes water in things, but you end up with a pool and not. So you can actually, the way it's designed, you have some of the areas on the plinths when the water's on that you can actually, if you want to, sit on the plinths. So there's a couple of options within the water. And then in the wintertime when the water is shut down, you can actually sit on the plinths anywhere on that. So.
And the paving, it will be concrete pavers and all that.
Yes, the pavers is a concrete paver.
Have you guys thought about stormwater management?
Oh, yes. There's so much we talked about or haven't talked about. We've got microbiofilters that are on one of the setbacks. We take all the stormwater and we run it through there and process it. So we do stormwater retention in the green roofs, and then we run it through the biofilter. So we've tried to be over the top wherever we can.
And the artwork is nice. Before I saw the artwork, I thought the vertical scale of the entrance is massive.
Mm-hmm.
And I think by introducing the artwork, we've scaled it down, which is great.
Yeah, exactly.
Another comment is you mentioned using ePay.
Mm-hmm.
I love ePay, but I'm concerned about sustainability.
Well, I said that defer to Trini.
Yeah.
So,
if you can use local wood, that would be great.
Yeah, we're trying to either
be sensitive to that,
be sustainable, or use an alternate, like Black Oak Booster.
That would be great.
Something,
That's an architect speaking of landscape architects' expertise. So.
The sidewalk integration of your project and the adjacent historic building, is that's a very abrupt change in materials between your sidewalk,
mm-hmm.
and their sidewalk.
Yeah.
I find that kind of disturbing in a sense of lack of continuity.
Right.
Trini can talk a little bit about it, but I think one of the things what we tried to do was to really create and expand the plaza area. So to really use that area and that, you have the Bethesda, sort of the Bethesda standard that's coming on these two areas, but to really highlight this area all across, sort of, and particularly at this intersection here, as sort of really pulling people into that plaza area and enlarging that area for the feel of the plaza. Trini, if you want to expand on that. But
the idea was to actually seamlessly integrate the sidewalk of the plaza and bring the plaza all the way out. Initially, as you can see, there is a great change, and When we had first started the project, we had kind of defined a plaza as a separate space and had the red ribbon of the sidewalk wrap around. And what it did is it actually didn't integrate the two. And what we really wanted to do for this space is to be really permeable and porous, so people kind of move through the space, mm-hmm. And have blur the edges of sidewalk and plaza and make it all one. And so that the as Jane said, the red is the streetscape standard that comes on all sides, and then it'll there is actually a change in the details of the plan. The change in textures on the paving at the south end by actually other requirements, but that'll start helping sort of blend that too. The size of the pavers gets a little smaller, and then in the plaza it transitions into a larger pattern.
Is this a color distinction or just a material distinction?
It'll be a color distinction. It's a lighter. Right.
Is there a way to highlight around the planter beds, etc., the standard red, you know, so that you have at least some continuity of. See, what happens is if each developer does his or her own thing, then we've got a lack of an image for the whole, mm-hmm. and so consequently, I'm looking for integration. Mm-hmm. In other words, I don't have any problem with the uniqueness of the plaza, etc. But it seems to me there could be some continuity of material, mm-hmm. you know, at least highlights, if nothing else.
Within that transition
right. zone, right. etc. Because all of a sudden it's very abrupt. Mm-hmm. And I remember, you know, working yeah. in New York with CityCorps when they did their new lighting around their building as opposed to using the standard New York mm-hmm. and using different paving materials, and it was extremely mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. awkward. And it was like, look at me, you know, we're different. We don't have to do what the whole is doing.
Where's food? Is there food and beverage in the hotel?
Yeah, it's and you may have picked up on a key thing. How do you get to it? Because loading dock's there. We've got a path, and there's a little portal, and they can literally flip across this circulation zone to manage it, and we felt it's right out there, and there may be a little tea room over there, but it's right out there, which
so
is
the
what
intention is. So the lobby is coming in here,
right.
And these are the shuttle elevators coming up, and the hotel elevators will be over here. And the idea, again, one of the things we're trying to do is to create really an environment where people work and where people exist in hotels. I was actually at an event at the Willard the other day, and I could not find a space at 5:30 in the lobby, like, to sit. It was packed.
Right.
So people don't want to spend time in their rooms. They want to get out, right. and that's the concept of the AC. You want to get out. You want to be downstairs. And what you see with office people is that, you know, you guys want to sit outside. You want to go find a cafe where people are working. You go meet somewhere. So the idea is sort of totally integrating technology throughout the building, so if somebody's on the, you know, 15th floor, then come down and they could sit. We're going to have seating area here. There's seating area in the hotel. Food and beverage sort of flows through this whole area and out here. So this is actually, the hotel will control food and beverage out here in sort of an outdoor space, which again is now covered under the building ledge and bleeds into here. We've working with the hotel to have, you know, grab and go in the morning. So there's coffee and, you know, office people as well as hotel use it. Somebody coming in off the street wants to sit in the plaza and work themselves. They come in, they grab coffee, they grab a snack in the afternoon. They have these new things where they turn, like, the grab and go in the morning. They flip it around and there's alcohol. It's perfect. It's the most wonderful thing in the world. And then, you know, you can flow out to sort of alcohol, obviously controlled by ABC in Montgomery County. Don't get me wrong on that. But we're not going to be out there. But, you know, people can come in, work out here, technology, Wi-Fi, you know, the latest. So it's really integrating the new way to work. New way people work and, you know, live in hotels when they visit, and really integrating this into activating this whole area up here.
So there's not a hard, fast line between F&B and the hotel lobby and the
no,
office.
No,
this line here.
That's
this
not even
flows
a hard, fast
through.
Line.
This will flow through between the two. Okay. And we're really working well with, right now, in terms of the concepts of the hotel, as they've gotten they've gotten underway on their design, sort of looking at how we flow through. How do you get, you know, where is their services that it works for people coming in the office, coming into the hotel, and really is sort of this flowing space that can be used by anybody in any location through here. You know, it helps, again, with this side core, because we can put our security here for office. So it's out of the way. Mm-hmm. People can active. This whole area is activated. We're looking, John's just starting sort of interior design, looking at big seating areas for people to come down. You could meet, you could have, you know, you could sit down and have even conferences in some of those areas.
If I may add, that's the same concept in the exterior. We didn't count that space as public, so it is counted as private. But the idea is to integrate those spaces seamlessly, again, and that creation of living rooms so people can use them as places to work or socialize, interact. And the furniture is also kind of flexible, so you can transform the space depending on events or the time of the year, however you guess, you know, used.
I've got a couple of comments that are the, well, unique things about the project, which I would expect from Picard Children. In Bethesda, we've avoided having covered public spaces for many years because they were not counted in the public space allocation because they were covered. And so this is refreshing that you're actually putting a building juxtaposition over the public space, thereby allowing the public realm to enter the building itself physically. And of course, the 40 or 50 foot and 60 foot height, I agree, is going to make plenty of light available there. So I think that, and you've got it right down to the detail that the columns are not 3x3, they're 6x6. So proportionally for the height,
right,
it's working beautifully. And your model doesn't tell you that, but
that's right,
but your renderings do. The second thing I think that's refreshing is that, you know, often we are put off by the fact of layering uses within a single tower. Each one has its own footprint and goes up here. You've very nicely integrated it, and it accomplishes a number of things and different things at different levels, like the ground floor, where, as we've been talking about, the hotel lobby ties everything together, and yet the hotel is quite a ways away and goes up on the back. So I think those are certainly notable. The third thing is that the models don't do justice to the project, I don't believe. I think your renderings are much more believable, and of course renderings lie, but they don't in this case, because first of all, I know the quality of the skin that you're talking about and how it's going together, and I think when you get to the bottom line of this building, while it is multifaceted in its number of masses and lights and things like that, I can begin to see the subtlety of the materiality running through this and tie it all together,
exactly,
which is going to be critical in terms of this coming off. Otherwise, as the model shows,
it's a little
gloppy
and probably might
present something.
I think that's
The other thing that appears to be working for you is you have an underlying scrim of facade onto which other things are layered, either overlayered, the one layer coming out, or articulated a different way. And I think, once again, that is a very positive way to make the building cohesive and yet appear to be not one mega building. I think that's excellent. I think the rooftop lantern, if you will, Erie, is going to be a dramatic landmark. It's given more precedence, I think, by the fact that there's something at the bottom and something at the top, and I think you experience them together, and I think that's a very, very, very good and positive thing. I think that I share Carl's concern on Waverly. I'm going to say the nasty word. Is there any way to internalize the loading so that you don't have a whole bunch of bays along Waverly? I know the answer is no, but I have to say it.
This is good, George.
If you didn't say that, George, we all would have challenged.
I just think it would be too bad if Waverly becomes a complete step out at this point.
Right.
And I don't know whether you're there or not.
Well,
I can't tell.
I think your concern is appropriate. Waverly will be loved very carefully before we build this building. And I think the comment about the stark podium, the sheer, and how we detail that, I think it's critical. And I'm glad you're saying it, because when we're having conversations with Jane and Doug in a few weeks, as we're hopefully advancing our work, I will remind them of the importance of getting Waverly right and thoughtfully detailed. So that's one of the values of this conversation.
This little architect love fest thing.
Well, it's because we have to be against the interests of our clients.
And you can imagine our friends that are sitting behind us in Park and Planning also have been stalwarts of Waverly Avenue.
Really?
Also, really. and we actually, you know, from the developer, we want credit, but we've actually worked a lot. We've narrowed and. It was bigger than this before, but we've worked to narrow the loading area in particular. We've been able to add more trees on Waverly. Originally, we had, you know, because again, our goal was to keep, you know, and not to make this a serious stepchild, but really having these two major intersections. You know, we have two curb cuts originally here. We've been able to obviously by moving things off. Montgomery, we've been able to get rid of, you know, sort of the curb cuts that the police station has right now. And so really activating those, we have worked very hard in terms of what it originally looked like to really try to add some trees. And again, we've got utilities and various things. So we take your comments to heart and we have actually been working on it. But I think we, again, some little bit different in terms right. We've been working on the hotel also relative to that.
The roofscape, the garden up here, mm-hmm. I didn't see any land use behind it. In other words, no rooms for breakout for
no,
events
it's,
or
it's,
anything like
it's,
that.
It's literally pure garden. It's pure garden. We're not being cute,
okay.
And you know, I didn't explain it, but the 250 foot cap is defined to that roof. So the only thing that goes above it is I'll call it architectural embellishments. It's the it's the overrun of the machine room for the elevators.
Yes, we have the elevators, bathroom or two,
but
it's really an outdoor space.
What's on this surface here?
That's the private. That's actually one of the clever things that Stonebridge is doing. There is a terrace that's available to the lucky tenant that takes the top few floors, so that they literally flow out, and that's their private world. And frankly, we're designing the public terrace
mm-hmm.
so that you don't necessarily look down on the private terrace.
Okay.
Yeah.
The proportions of this bar versus that bar, did you look at a study where they were combined two slivers?
Yeah, well.
They're almost too equal. I would love to have one of them more dominant.
Yeah.
You know, and this one seems thin to mm-hmm. me relative to how this
right.
dimension here, and your structural system would allow you to alter that
mm-hmm.
so that this is more dominant. Your renderings, I think, are more successful than the model.
Yeah, yeah. The models, you know, was quite a few months ago.
Right.
The renderings are more accurate.
There.
But there's if you go into the plan, there's a
yeah.
logic to what we're doing in terms of what the structural frame of the
mm-hmm.
building wants to be and
right.
how that supports that. And so it just is it's a kind of a plan logic. And to be frank, we like the fact that it almost acts like a bit of a lighthouse. It's like a beacon, it's a tower. And although I appreciate, you know, they are similar in width, this is still dominant both in width and in its proximity to Wisconsin.
And
it's
height.
And it's height.
And
it's height.
Down
yeah.
And up.
Yeah, right. Exactly. The lift on the office side
yep.
of the entrance.
Yep.
And then the lower at the top will make it kind of compress.
I don't think they're competing with each other myself.
I think it's a nice, what's great about this also is you're coming up Montgomery and you kind of slightly turn.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when you're coming up, you're looking dead on to that piece that has the top.
Well, that was actually intention. Is that this sure becomes a beacon
like
that.
That
you can
see it.
That's it.
This,
there you go.
Yeah.
You're coming up.
Yeah, and I think this is much of the reality of what you'll see, because that's pushed back a little bit, and so that becomes dominant, and that's really what you.
This is coming out of the elevator of the metro.
Yeah.
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 That's exactly. And there's actually, as Trini was saying, there's quite a lot of grade change as you get to the top. So we start out at like 328 at the corner,
mm-hmm.
and we're at 335 by the time we get to the hotel entrance. So you've got that. No. So tell me what my numbers are.
348 to 353.
Okay. It's 10 off each way.
Five feet.
So
that's pretty. big rise. Which, Montgomery still looks to me to be a nightmare. Not the architecture, the planning. Is that actually a lay-by for the hotel? You didn't mention it.
Yes,
yes.
It is a lay-by.
And then you cross over the bike pass.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so imagine if this is really...
I'm trying to imagine.
No. I had the same reaction. This just looks goofy. Imagine this is all... Imagine it's all beige. Imagine that beige. And then what happens, there's the bike path, oops, is down there. And so the lay-by is here, and people just walk across... That.
Right. So the concept was, we feel the lay-by is very important for the hotel. We understand, because you've got, particularly, one of the things we did, which John mentioned the number of cars is 500, we actually have less than the required number of cars. So we're really trying to push within the project for the current state, having, many more people coming by metro. It's a very metro-centric place. The ride share and what you've learned from with a lot of the hotels is Metro, Uber, Lyft, and what's going to happen in 10 or 20 years, as my husband says, who's the futurist, self-driving cars, right? They're going to drop you off and take you out, and drive away, and I've lost the plan. I don't know what happened.
I keep touching the screen.
Justin, find me my way. Yeah, right. So when we had the discussions with Park and Planning and DOT. Told you I wasn't a very good driver on this. I'm a really good car driver. I won a Connecticut State Championship in driving, came in fourth. But so little high school tidbit for you all.
Okay.
I'm sure Robert Cronenberg will come back at me for that someday.
Why did he get worse?
4 out of 4.
No, actually, it was like 30 people. It does change everything, doesn't it? I can tell you the other thing I won in high school, and we'll really have fun. But so one of the questions was,
I don't want to know.
Connecticut State Junior Bowler Champion, 1978. So anyway, now I'll turn really red. They've seen me turn red before when I said something else. But so we had a lot of discussions about the lay-by relative to the bike path. And the question became, does the car cross the bike path or do the people cross the bike path?
Yeah.
And so this is actually a pretty standard way. I'm learning my bicycle routing here. To be desired for the people to pull off the bike, so dropping here, and that you're actually having a pedestrian and a bicycle as opposed to a car and a bicycle.
Gotcha.
So that if you think about who gets hit and what gets hurt relative to that, and if you're getting out with your suitcase, you're already stopped, you're getting out, you're walking across the bike path, it's a bit safer than having the car traverse into that and back out. So we've done a lot of work with DOT in designing this over the last month, I guess, with them. And Park and Planning has been on many of the phone calls with that in terms of the planning with DOT.
Yeah.
So I've done a lot of work in the Netherlands, and I think one of the problems you're going to have is bikes hitting people.
Right. No question.
Coming out. And what you may want to really consider is raising that path slightly across and changing the materials to slow the bicyclists down.
Absolutely.
They don't think they have
a clip. So this has been thrown on, so I think from the master plan and the desire for this bike path, it's really been thrown sort of on all of us very quickly. So this is the initial layout, and what our condition in the site plan recommendation for our February hearing, right, Elsa, will be that we will continue to work with DOT and Park and Planning to finalize this. What we wanted to get out in the site plan is what sort of the general layout, the general concept. The state still has to approve this too. So it's a state road, so the state has to go into it. These are really good comments that I think collectively we'll take back to discussions with DOT and their they have a consultant that's working with them on the bike trails that are coming through.
Why not across the street? Why isn't the bike on the northern part of the street as opposed to the southern part of the street?
Yeah, I think that this was preferred by our transportation planners. But we are reaching the end of our time here.
I'm not convinced about that. And it's two directions. That's that's the critical thing, because if it was on the northern part, the right turn on would be very easy.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas on this, it's very hard to make that right turn if you're a bicycle person.
Mm-hmm.
And
so
what's the deal? You know, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you could recommend in the comments that the planning board take a close look at this at their site plan review,
the design
panel.
Of the bike path.
Well, this is site plan.
Yeah.
Yep.
It won't be finalized until after the hearing, unless you want to delay the hearing.
But
no.
I think what we're hearing clearly is that the committee has a concern about the Montgomery Avenue streetscape in terms of how the bike path will function, and that they really think that needs a lot of additional thought.
Mm-hmm. I'm also concerned about queuing. Now, this is only 225 keys, and probably a limited service hotel of some sort.
Yes, yeah. Limited service.
You don't have major ballrooms or any.
No, we have a joint. We didn't talk about it. We have a joint amenity space up on the top. A couple of small conference room and a fitness facility.
So
but it's, there's no ballrooms. There's no big rooms.
No long queuing for major.
It's not
going to
be a major event.
Doesn't work for the queuing.
It's not
going to
be a major event.
Right.
We also, with the hotel, has 35 of the 500 are reserved for them for parking. And after hours, those two lower level parking will become available for the hotel just for their convenience. So that also works with the transportation method and ways for people to come. More on the weekend drive, because there are more families on the weekend. So that allows them to have the parking within that, the lower two levels of the parking garage.
Well, if you need any support in arguing, okay.
It's actually quite a challenge.
So we're going to have to wrap up so that there are two issues that we should review. The first is exceptional design, public benefit points. You're requesting how many points?
30
points. So the question for the panelists, do you think it's appropriate that they request 30 points of the planning board? Or do you have any thoughts on that number?
Or any thoughts about in general about the design? Do you think this constitutes exceptional design?
I think it's a really good design. I think it'd be great for Bethesda. I think the plaza out in front is great. I think it's big, will contribute to the community. My only regret is the rooftop element won't be open to the public. You have to be a tenant to be up there. I think everybody's going to
We can solve
there.
That for you. We can provide access.
The man in the corner finally speaks.
How many square feet
do you need to lease? Unfortunately, we just signed a lease for other space a couple weeks ago.
That's total open for anyone that leases.
I think it is worth 30 points, to be honest with you. I really do. I think it's a potentially really great project.
What's the score they're asking for?
30 out of 30.
You know, you learn to go big or go home.
That's Jane. What can I say?
As we discussed, we aren't asking you all to be the number crunchers and to figure out the points, but generally to talk to the applicant and staff about whether you think this constitutes exceptional design.
I think there are many things about the project that are unique and special that you don't see every day in an urban project, and I think that of the ones that we've seen, which is limited at this point, this certainly approaches what I would consider exceptional design. And that partly has to do with the confidence that I have that the right detail, ultimately, from our textual standpoint, will offer that extra level of finesse that I think is important. So that's my opinion.
I think the public realm issues are terrific.
Yes.
You know, I like the project in whole, but I'm not convinced by three distinct pieces of architecture in one holistic project. I think it's a little bit schizophrenic in that regard. So I'm not as happy with the 30 points.
In minor defense, I think George said it well, where the model makes it look like it's three distinct. I think there's an underlying organizing principle that there's a transformation in that center element, but it is less. In my mind, it will be less schizophrenic in its execution than what that model suggests. So,
as I said, I think the rendering showed that much better.
Well, particularly at the corner, I'm just worried about this and that there's certain lines that could be picked up that come across all three volumes, if you will, that could hold it together.
I think they're there, but I'm really wrong.
No, they're not. Well, I mean,
I'm not arguing.
Yep. See, I think back here, that's a pretty good composition, etc. Here, I'm just concerned that there's no translation across.
Carl, see this rendering?
Yeah, I understand that rendering. I'm looking at just Montgomery Avenue elevation as a set piece.
Any other thoughts?
I think it's very handsome building with very nice design, lobby and open space and the plaza area, so.
Yeah, I'm in agreement. It was very thoughtful design for the specific site context.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So I'm just going to quickly go through your recommendations as a board. You had many questions and comments and compliments, but then there are just a few actual recommendations. The first was regarding the facade, that the Waverly facade upper floors do not seem to interlock and integrate with the base. In terms of materiality in the plaza, the IPE, there was a concern about sustainability and would recommend local sourcing. The sidewalk transition seemed abrupt between this property and the adjacent property, and so there should be some way to maintain a consistent color at that transition or integrate the streetscape standard material for continuity, particularly around the tree zones. And then there was a concern on Waverly for at where the loading is, and is there a way to internalize the loading, understanding that this may not work with the design of the building. And then the proportions of the bars on the Wisconsin facade, one panel member did seem to feel that they were similar and one should be more dominant, though other panelists had a dissenting opinion and they believed that these masses weren't competing. There was a concern about the pedestrian crossing from along the lay-by, and that pedestrians, maybe there's a way to raise that crossing so pedestrians don't get hit by cyclists, and to generally consider how the bike path should function and how that also works with queuing. There was a concern also about queuing along the street. And finally, that the public realm is terrific, but maybe the three pieces of architecture in one building, particularly as you look at it from Montgomery Avenue, is not integrated well enough. So again, there were dissenting opinions that felt that this was integrated sufficiently and that there were, when you look at the renderings. Does that seem to capture your thoughts and recommendations? And finally, of course, that the panel generally recommends the 30 points except for the one dissenting opinion about passing.
I think there's a, in a lot of the discussions we've had, there's always been sort of a question mark about how that historic building starts to integrate with the plaza and, you know, that whole space. But I think that what you had mentioned, Carl, about trying to bring the streetscape in a little bit might help in that transition.
Mm-hmm.
Because you also have the brick building, which is sort of the color. And I think that's a great way to maybe alleviate some of that stark change.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a listed building?
Yes.
Yeah, it is.
Fantastic. Well, we are going to wrap up and bring in the next group.
Great.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you.